calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Coming up on today's program, David Sirota will be here in the second hour of our program. His new book, Hostile Takeover, How Big Money and Corruption Conquered Our Government and How We Can Take It Back. David Sirota, one of the most competent observers and brilliant writers in the American political scene right now. In the third hour, Senator Deborah Bowen will join us with voting troubles in California. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson, enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of body and mind will vanish like spirits at the dawn of day. Sounds like a fine plan, doesn't it? A lot in the news, by the way. I've got an amazing story to tell you about what the Republicans are up to with regard to oil. And in fact, I want to tie it into a story about something that I saw when the last time I was in Russia. We'll get into that in the second hour of the program in all probability. And just an enormous amount of news. Federal prosecutors looking into whether Duke Cunningham was getting prostitutes from defense contractors and whether other members of Congress did. Why isn't anybody putting these defense contractors out of business? This just baffles me. Anyhow, we've got a whole, and Rice and Rumsfeld in Iraq, a whole lot of stuff to get into. But first, Robert Garmong is with us. He specializes in political theory, ethics, and the philosophy of law over at the Ayn Rand Foundation, or Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. And Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Robert. You have recently written a piece, a little op-ed piece here, well, not little, an op-ed piece here in which you suggest that it is wrong for we the people to say to nonprofit organizations that if you want to maintain your nonprofit status, you can't meddle in politics. Why do you say this?
Well, Tom, I think that this is one of the sort of little known and little observed threats to freedom of speech in this country. You know, we think of ourselves as the discoverers of freedom of speech. Our First Amendment was what put freedom of speech on the map, really. But our government right now says that if you have nonprofit status, if you're a church or any other sort of nonprofit organization, you are not allowed to make political speech. We're coming into an election cycle again, and for the next 6 or 8 months now, essentially the IRS becomes the censor over every nonprofit organization, and I think that is flatly wrong.
Well, I would say, Robert Garmong, that just like the guys over at Fox News who are making this argument, you're omitting half the sentence. You say that the government is saying to nonprofit organizations, you cannot engage in political speech, but the other half of the sentence is without losing your nonprofit status.
That's
nobody's
right.
Going to show up at a church with a gun and say, hey, if you say that, I'm going to shoot you. Nobody's going to arrest a minister for saying, hey, you should vote for George Bush. It's just you can't maintain your nonprofit status. This has nothing to do with freedom of speech.
Oh, God.
This has to do with freedom to maintain a nonprofit status, which is a special exemption.
Now you've turned me into Tony Snow, please.
Okay, I'll give you, Robert, that you and Tony Snow have a lot of differences, and I truly appreciate your honesty and your integrity, and you're not Fox News. Okay, I'll give you that. But the Fox News people are making the same argument. At least they did in the last election cycle. You know, why is it, in fact, it was a big deal for O'Reilly and all these guys, why is it that the churches can't endorse people? This is wrong, quack, quack, quack. But the bottom line is that we're saying, here's my take on it, and tell me what I'm missing, Robert. We collectively as a people decided that there are some things that are really important that we want to have in our society. They're so important that even though we're not going to do them through government because we think they're best done privately, we will subsidize them. We will pay for their police protection. We will pay for their fire protection. We will pay for the public roads getting to them. We'll pay for the educated workforce that they need. We will exempt them from taxation. We'll carry their load or their share of the cost of participating in a democratic republic. And in exchange for that, and these functions that are so critical that we all agree on are things like education, caring for children and the homeless, feeding people who are hungry, and preaching to people. We've collectively agreed that spirituality is important, just as important as education. And all we ask of them is saying, we're going to give you a special exemption to the rules if you will refrain from participating in the process by which the rules are made. That's being known as politics. What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, we the people didn't make that decision. It was LBJ, after a particularly vitriolic campaign against him by some nonprofits, who pushed through, back in his day as a senator, this rule. It didn't exist until 1954, so it's...
You're right.
It is essentially brand new. I mean, it's older than I am, but...
Well, not-for-profits are relatively new. They just go back to the 30s, as I recall.
That's right. But what we've done is we've essentially created the system where you risk, and we're not talking about trivial sums here. Taxation is, we just paid our taxes a few weeks ago. Taxation is a significant price that we all pay. And so we're talking about significant amounts of money that these nonprofits will be penalized. And frankly, I have been, you know, I work with the Ayn Rand Institute. I have been in situations where I was not allowed to say what I wanted to say, and I've seen other people do it too, because we don't know whether the IRS is going to come in and penalize us thousands and thousands of dollars, many, many thousands of dollars.
Well, you were allowed to say it. You just might have had to then start picking up the bill for your share of the commons.
Well, now, we're on a somewhat different issue here, but frankly, tax-exempt status is not a gift. It's not a subsidy, as you put it. It's a lack of a penalty. So, in effect...
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting that taxes are a penalty?
Of course they are. You come in, you bring your jackbooted IRS agents into our nonprofit and shut us down to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. That is a penalty.
So let me flip this around, Robert, and just, you know, please refute this. If you can refute this and make sense, I will be amazed. But, but you know, you and I both use the public roads. You and I both use the, you know, police protection. You and I both are secure with fire department protection. You and I are pleased that there's a military defending our nation. That's the cost of democracy. It sounds to me like you're defending your right to be a freeloader.
Well, my view is that taxation, if you want to go into this, it's a different issue. My view is that taxation itself ought to be done through fees and things, and it should be voluntary in effect. But that's a different issue. But when the IRS gets to determine who gets to say what, why, and when, I think that is a violation of the First Amendment. If I say that, for example, I'm in favor of free and open immigration. Now, that's become associated with a political party, namely George Bush.
Well, there's a lot of Democrats out there saying that, too. I think they're nuts, but they're out there.
Well, I think you're nuts, but we have mutual assured destruction.
Yeah, we respectfully consider the craziness of each other. Okay.
That's right. That's why I love being on this show, Tom.
Thank you.
But now that has become associated with one, and actually you're right, with many political parties. Now, if I say that when we're coming up to an election, that has become political speech. And now am I advocating a particular party? Well, not particularly. I don't especially love Bush or I don't love really anyone in politics today. But my speech in favor of free and open immigration has become now advocacy of a party. Now, the IRS may decide that I have become an advocate. They may come in, they may tax me, they may shut me down, they may, and you know, nonprofits are not a lush landscape of vast riches. So,
well, how is it then that that Pat Robertson made $1 billion on his Christian Broadcasting nonprofit network?
Oh, I wish
empire.
I knew, Tom.
I mean, he's got Operation Blessing up there on the FEMA website, and he's using the planes to ferry around diamond miners in Africa.
Well, more power to him. I have no great love for Pat Robertson, but let me tell you from the perspective of one small person working for one small nonprofit, if we lost our tax exempt status, we would be in serious trouble.
Yeah, I agree. But again, what I'm saying is that, or I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think that what you should be arguing is that if you play by the same rules everybody else does, you can make money in this competitive marketplace. And if you can't, then you can't. But let's continue this, Robert. And also, I noticed that we've got some callers here who would like to discuss this with you and with me, if you don't mind taking some calls.
Terrific.
Okay, let's stick around over the break here. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. We're talking with Robert Garmong. He specializes in political theory, ethics, and philosophy of law at the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. I'm losing my religion. Trying to keep up with you. And I don't know if I can do it.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we have a rendezvous with destiny, and that destiny is democracy. Welcome back to our program. We're talking with Robert Garmong. He's with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. And one of the reasons that I like having folks on from Ayn Rand is, number one, Ayn Rand, with her book in particular, Atlas Shrugged, was one of the founding thinkers of what has now become the libertarian movement and a large chunk of today's conservative movement, even though I know that you guys consider them far too wishy-washy for the positions that you would take. But
That's right.
I think you have to acknowledge that folks like George W. Bush and Grover Norquist are pulling an awful lot of the talking points from your thinking. And secondly, you guys are honest. You will, because you don't have a political agenda. You'll just come out and say you don't believe in democracy, for example. It's this is where you stand.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome, Robert. And I appreciate you coming on the program on a regular basis. So here's the bottom line. I don't have a problem with subsidizing Jerry Falwell if he's preaching the gospel, because I think that preaching the gospel, or any religion, frankly, is something that society is worthy of societal support. I don't have a problem with an artist having a nonprofit agency support them, because I think the arts are worthy of support. I don't have a problem with Ayn Rand, or for that matter, a liberal think tank being out there and having a discussion, a thought-provoking discussion, and putting forward their ideas. But when you guys start involving yourself in politics, at that point, I don't want to pay your bill anymore.
Well, Tom, if I believed that nonprofit status was a form of subsidy, then I personally would be deeply offended by Jerry Falwell and by liberal think tanks and by conservative think tanks.
How is it not a subsidy if you don't have to pay for your police and fire protection and I have to pay for it for you?
Well, my view is that taxation is a penalty that we all pay, and it's unfortunate that
a penalty
we have
for
to
what?
Pay it.
What's the crime we committed that we're being penalized for?
Living, apparently. And you people on the left want us to pay more and more. So I don't really know what I've done wrong that would lead to this penalty.
Well, I would say, do you drink fresh water, pure water?
Sure.
Okay, that's provided pure for you by taxpayer dollars. Are you sure that your food, relatively certain that your food supply is safe?
Well, I actually pay for water via my local district, so.
Right, and I guarantee that local district is regulated by a government agency to make sure that the water is actually pure.
Sure.
And most of them actually didn't start out privatized. I mean, your food supply is pure. You use the public roads. I mean, I don't get it what you're missing about the commons.
That's right. Well, but Tom, we're not given an option. I mean, no one came to me and said, I did not sign a social contract that said I agreed to the crushing of any private provision of roads and water and so on.
But
so,
Robert, similarly, if I walk into a 7-Eleven and I pick up a candy bar and I tear the thing open and take a bite out of it, I haven't signed a contract, but I sure owe 7-Eleven that money. I'd say as long as you stay in the United States and use these services, you need to pay for them.
Well, you could make the exact same argument for Nazi Germany. As long as you stayed there and you're a Jew, you agreed to be thrown in a...
No, you can't make that argument because Nazi Germany was not a democracy, and this is a democracy. You can leave the United States. You could not leave Nazi Germany.
But I can vote against whatever viewpoint I don't want to be, whatever political issue I don't want, and I still lose. So,
well, nobody's trying to stop you from voting. We're just saying, hey, if you want to engage in political activity, that's fine. We're all in favor of that. But just don't expect me to pay for your police and fire and roads and food and everything else.
My rights are not protected by your democracy. My rights are being violated by your democracy. And now there's a crucial issue here. That
why don't you move to Iraq? It's privatization heaven.
Well, I don't really think that Iraq is our issue here today, but if there's a job there, I'll go. Now, there's a crucial issue that I think we're ignoring here that hasn't come up, and that is that what constitutes political advocacy is an extremely fungible issue, and it's the sort of thing that the IRS has adamantly refused to define.
I agree with you. There need to be tighter definitions, because you've got a church in California that where the preacher gave an anti-war speech that didn't mention a single politician, and they're at risk of they're being investigated by the IRS. And you got Falwell going on TV coast to coast repeatedly on programs like, you know, Crossfire, openly advocating George W. Bush, and he's not being investigated. I agree with you. The IRS isn't enforcing these laws evenly.
Well, but my point is that the laws are not enforceable. It's absolutely impossible to define what constitutes advocacy when a policy gets associated with a particular individual who's running for office. There's no way to define the difference between advocacy of a policy and advocacy of that partisan.
Well, that's the one reasonable point you've made, I think, so far. Robert, stick around. We got a whole bunch of callers. We'll take them right after this. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Not long ago in America, the nation's heartbeat throbbed. United, not divided. Families only needed one job. Folks could afford a baseball game, hot dog and a beer. Vacation in the summer. Add a few new clothes each year. Big MacDonald had a farm. Then he opened a burger joint. We've drowned in fat ever since. Till there really ain't no point. Tipped beyond measure. We keep coming back for more. Now the justice scale lies broken all over the global floor.
And welcome back, my friends. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's the Tom Hartman program, where we dare to ask, is it 2008 yet? Well, not quite. 998 days, 12 hours, 25 minutes, 49 seconds until George W. Bush leaves office, unless he is impeached. Just as an FYI, right now, Ron Wyden on the floor of the Senate going on and on about how we should, and good on him, by the way, for it, about how we should eliminate these $8 billion in so-called incentives that we gave to the oil industry as a result of Dick Cheney's super private energy task force meetings. Shell oil companies already come out and said that they don't need them. Even Bush says that oil over $50 a barrel, it's silly to be giving them incentives. But the Republicans hanging on tight, man. They don't want to give up those big campaign contributions from Lee Raymond and ExxonMobil that just declared an $8.4 billion quarterly profit. We're talking with Robert Garmong of Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org. And let's just take some phone calls here, Robert, if that's all right with you.
Sounds good to me, Tom.
Okay.
I do think it's kind of funny that you're all about the gas prices, but you're against the oil companies. So
I'm against cartels. You know, back 20 years ago, we had more than a dozen oil companies in the United States. Now we have four. According to Chuck Schumer, the oil companies run their refineries at 85% capacity during the winter because people drive less, and 95% during the summer. And right now, they're refusing to go back up to 95% capacity, thus creating supply shortages, thus driving up prices.
They are gaming the system. More refineries going, but the vicissitudes of our political leadership, which in your democracy can change on a dime, prevents them from doing it. But
no, this has nothing to do with this has nothing to do with politics. They're not raising the output, their production of gasoline from the 85% of capacity to 95% of capacity, as they have every year for the last, 30 years. This year, they're not doing it, and it's jacking up gasoline prices.
It has everything to do with politics, and we're on a different issue, and I'm sorry for raising it, but
it's okay.
I was just listening to you, and maybe we could have another show on this issue. But
there you go. Let's get back to our callers here. Ed in West Palm Beach, Florida. You're on the line with Robert Garmong. Hey, Ed.
Hi. Hello.
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 Just wanted to make a quick comment to sort of separate the ability of individuals to express their opinion in a variety of formats on a radio show like this or in the newspaper, op-ed columns and so forth, which anyone's free to do, versus utilizing the resources of a nonprofit organization to sway the political process, which is, I think, where people get, the organizations get in trouble. And, it just seemed to be muddying the waters a little bit in that the guest was expressing that he was a victim because he wasn't allowed to say what he wanted to. But I think it's just that the organization isn't allowed to sway the political process.
Robert, isn't it the case that if you were here simply as Robert Garmong, human being, you could say anything you wanted, but as long as we're pitching Ayn Rand, then you can't get into political advocacy because you guys are nonprofit?
Well, Tom, would you have me on your show if I were a Robert Garmong human being?
Now that I'm getting to know you, probably I would.
Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence, but it does require resources to get your view out in public. And if you think that we should have a world in which resources are not relevant, well, then we have to have plain old socialism where the government sponsors every relevant idea.
I'm not suggesting either.
Decide which ideas are relevant and which are not.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting either, Robert. And with regard to your And you know that. And with regard to your point of, how do we define advocacy, I think it's, on as much as I hate to quote Ed Meese, his comment about pornography, I may not be able to define it, but I sure know it when I see it. And that, that's where we've been operating up to this point. Although I know that you think that there should not be any laws against pornography. That's a whole other topic that we can talk about, because in that, probably I by and large agree with you. But in any case, let's get back.
That was actually not Ed Meese. It was he was quoting a Supreme Court justice, and I believe it was Potter Stewart, but I may be wrong about that.
You probably know better than I do. Frank in Altoona, Pennsylvania, you're live and on the air. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, personally, I disagree with both of you a little bit. I think that religion should be completely disallowed to even be involved. I don't think the president should be able to talk about it and about his faith and all that. I mean, it should just be, freedom of religion, period, but not when it involves government at all.
Robert?
Well, I actually think I agree with you. I don't think you're disagreeing with me at all, because
that's because Ayn Rand is officially atheist.
That's right, and I myself am an atheist. So
I'm not an atheist. I have to believe in a higher being than me, but I don't think anyone on this earth really has it figured out as to how it works.
Well, and let me just tell me if I'm agreeing or disagreeing with you, but I think in your official capacity as any sort of government official, it's wrong for you to make any kind of religious pronouncement, because someone is going to disagree.
Well, it's wrong, or it's just going to end up hurting you politically. I mean, ultimately, that's going to come back down to the will of the voters, so don't you think?
Well, I don't think
Frank,
it
thanks a lot.
Should. You know, I'm not a Democrat, so if...
A small-D Democrat. You don't believe in,
right.
You don't believe in democracy.
That's
you believe in a rule by a corporate elite.
Yeah, I live in Texas, where 98% of the voting populace is profoundly religious.
Mm-hmm.
I am not.
Yeah, so there you're in the minority. Okay, interesting point. Let's move along here. Mary in Fairfield, California. Mary, you're live with Robert Garmong from Ayn Rand.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just been reading about the Ayn Rand Institute recently because of a conversation with someone. I thought that I didn't like Ayn Rand, but she convinced me I should read about Ayn Rand, and I conclude, well, yeah, there's a lot good there. But I don't really know what I think of the Ayn Rand Institute. I'm not sure how much that ties in. And what triggered me to call was the talk about free speech when your guest was proclaiming his love of free speech. But I found in my recent research that I think it was Andrew Bernstein of Ayn Rand Institute has been even calling for a boycott of books and the Journal of Ayn Rand. I thought, what's that all about?
I don't want to wander off here, Mary. Thank you for coming into the internal politics of Ayn Rand. But
that's right. But let me, Tom, if you will. I'm not going to speak about the particulars that you're mentioning. If you want to find my email address online, you're welcome to email me.
Okay. Let's just leave it at that. You can find it at aynrand.org, right, Robert?
That's right.
Robert Garmong, G-A-R-M-O-N-G. Tom in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Tom.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm listening here with fascination. You know, I was thinking that I could make a point to say it was your choice to create and join and participate in a nonprofit. I'm wondering if choice or freedom is even something that your speaker believes in.
Robert?
Well, I absolutely believe in choice and freedom.
And why didn't you choose to run Ayn Rand as a for-profit corporation, and then you can say absolutely anything you want, not worry about whether or not you're going to lose your tax exemption?
Well, except that you would have me shut down because I would then be a corporation.
I'm all in favor of corporations. I own a corporation.
Yeah, but Tom, you don't want corporations to have any part in politics. So.
I don't want them misbehaving. You're right. I don't think the corporations are persons. I think only human beings are persons.
No, they should be able to participate. It's just the tax exemption and nonprofits taking donations that corporations get to write off as tax exemptions. You know, there's got to be some rules. If you believe in freedom and you want to have a playground that everybody can go out and enjoy themselves on, there's got to be some rules.
Good point, Tim.
Well, but wait a minute. Now, we have defined as the people that Tom keeps talking about, we have defined the political sphere as something where if you participate in it, you get penalized.
No, you don't get penalized. You get rewarded if you educate people, care for the poor, feed the sick, feed the hungry, care for the sick, or preach to people. You get rewarded for that. You don't get penalized if you participate in politics.
Oh, now there's a very interesting discussion here between of the difference between rewards and penalties. Taxation is a penalty.
No, it's not. It's the dues you pay to be a member of a civil society. And if you don't want to pay those dues, go to Iraq.
This society gets to define its taxation as whatever it wants. So if I...
Through our elected representatives representing, at least hopefully and in theory, the will of the majority of the people.
Hopefully and in theory. But... No, if I'm not in that majority, I get penalized for not being in it.
No, you don't. You have to play by the rules that we've all decided to play
by. Tom, it's the tyranny of the majority. Tocqueville talked about it. Mill talked about
it. It's called democracy, Robert. It's called democracy. We're talking with Robert Garmong of Ayn Rand. We'll be back. Robert, stick around. We'll be back with your calls right after this. It's 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
No one's got no sky. if he could set us free. He said there's a little gas going, but you have to wait. Radiocracy, red hot speed, and some really high grade hats. But a gallon of gas can't be purchased anywhere for any amount of cash.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. John Kenneth Galbraith, the esteemed economist, said the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy, that is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Robert?
Well, I think John Kenneth Galbraith engaged in an attempt to justify socialism that I absolutely disagree with.
Okay. Dale in Everett, Washington on the line. Hey, Dale, you're live with Robert Garmong from Ayn Rand.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks for having me on. I had rather an esoteric point, which was in my readings of Ayn Rand's books way back when I was a youngster, I identified the fundamental flaw from my perspective, which is in her books, she recognizes a system that's broken and requires a hero to fix it.
Right. Who is John Galt?
Who is John Galt? Her books require a Christ-like figure to come in and impose an enlightened self-interest philosophy in this case, the United States, and suddenly capitalists the little light will go off in their head, and they will suddenly realize that they can't be carnivorous to the point of destroying their own environment.
Yeah.
And everybody
words,
will be happy, and everybody will get along. And
right. In other words, you're saying their system is an impossibility.
Right. My point is that under enlightened self-interest, fascism works. Socialism works. It doesn't matter if everybody's out to serve everybody else. Then it doesn't matter what the political system is. Everybody will do the right thing.
So, if I may, what Ayn Rand does is to call on each of us to reach our highest potential. So, it's not that she wants a John Galt or a hero to come in and correct the world for us. She wants us to make our own lives what they might be.
But in her books, that's not the way the world is. It isn't working that way, and it requires somebody to come in and fix it. Because here she is, the heroine of capitalism, and even she recognizes that the system is ultimately corrupt and corruptible and prone to greedy people coming in and taking over and not acting for anyone's interest but their own.
But you're talking about the system as if it were some sort of cabal. But what Ayn Rand wants...
You think the oil companies are not a cabal, Robert?
What's that?
You think the big four oil companies are not a cabal?
Well, what Ayn Rand wants is for there to be absolute liberty such that each of us may make of our lives what we wish it to be. And I think that is a noble ideal.
Yeah, but in my opinion, where she's missing the boat, and Dale, thank you for the call, where she's missing the boat is that liberty has to exist in the context of a society. And you guys don't believe in the social contract that defines society, and that's where she just totally fell off the edge.
Well, sure, it has to exist in the context of society, and there are individual rights under which you have the right to define your happiness as you wish it to be. And, Tom, your happiness would be different from mine, but we each have our individual right to pursue that, and I do not believe that the Democratic majority has the right to vote us out of existence.
Okay. Well, we've got a whole bunch of calls here, Robert. We only have about 3 minutes left. Let's try and deal with this fairly quickly. Henry in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Henry, you're live with Robert.
Yes, how are you doing, Dave? I just want to comment on, the president even used the church himself to try to, get votes and criticize the churches who speak against them, try to get the tax exemption taken from them. But like that guy was sitting there talking about a socialist society and everything else, now there's some things the government needs to maintain and take control of, that private corporations should never have an opportunity to touch anyway. And that's for example, the energy crisis right now. The private corporation, corporate America, should never, ever pat a hand to put into it as for power companies and things of that nature. And that's just why I think about it.
Okay, thank you, Henry. In fact, in most of the United States, Robert, power electricity is provided by public utilities.
Yes, and, that's right.
And then Enron came along and said, let's privatize that. And what did it do? It shut down California.
Well, it wasn't real privatization. And you know, Tom, that
it was
an absolute free market. So.
Okay. All right. We got it. Jack in Indianapolis. We have less than a minute left. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I echo what Dale said to you two callers ago. I just want to quickly give Robert some good news. Robert, you're kind of 80% right and 20% wrong on the government. You are allowed to participate up to 20% of your operating budget, if you're in the 501c category, on any kind of political activity you want. If you want to go beyond 20% of your yearly operating budget, then you must provide a white paper. And, for instance, that would be, if I were for the death penalty, I would need to explain why folks were against the death penalty and let them make their decision. That kind of
Jack, are you a tax expert?
Subject. Hello?
Are you a tax expert, Jack?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact. Thanks.
Huh.
Well, and I definitely don't know the legal details, but I do know that free speech is being squashed.
Yeah, interesting. Robert Garmong, Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org. Robert, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Fascinating conversation. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Next, our government under assault, David Sirota. Will tell us how to take it back. One of the great minds of our day. I kid you not. No, I'm not exaggerating. David Sirota, brilliant guy. He's going to be with us right after the break. Stick around. 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
With us, David Sirota, in my opinion, one of the most articulate, insightful, thoughtful, brilliant, and accurate observers of the modern political scene. He has a new book out called Hostile Takeover: How Big Money and Corruption Conquered Our Government and How We Can Take It Back. He's starting a tour around the country promoting this book. And tomorrow, Friday the 28th, he will be in Sacramento, California. And we're of course, on the air in KSAC in Sacramento, so I particularly want to plug that. There's a whole bunch of others here coming up. You can find them over at davidsirota.com. David Sirota, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thanks for the introduction.
Sure. Just to finish up this plug, in Sacramento, where are you going to be on Friday?
I'm going to be at the convention center speaking at the California Democratic Convention. We're going to do a book signing, Q&A, all that stuff.
Great. 4:30 to 6:30 tomorrow.
Correct.
Friday, April 28th. Okay, so you talk in your book about the hostile takeover. Let's just start with the title. Why hostile takeover?
Well, because the book basically says that our government has been the victim of a hostile takeover by big money interests. Some would say, listen, well, it's not that hostile that the politicians have gone along with it. But I would say that it's hostile in terms of its effect and the opposition to it from ordinary citizens. In other words, our government really has been taken away from us by big money interests. Now, and as I point out in the book, that our government now either does nothing to solve problems or actually aids and abets the corporate interests who have created a lot of these problems.
And how did this happen?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, and money has always been a powerful force in politics, and I believe that it always will be a force in politics. Similarly, I think there's always going to be one business party in this country. There always has throughout history, and I think that there always will be. Money is just that powerful.
The Basically, problem really, from the Federalists to the Republicans.
Exactly. The problem is that today we live in an era where we have roughly 1.5 business parties, where half of the Democratic Party, certainly very prominent Democrats, have become part of the hostile takeover of our government on these economic issues, so that there's not really as strong a counterweight to big money interests in our political arena as there has been in the past. And so the entire process has moved towards the right, towards a situation where the government aids and abets a big money interest war on ordinary citizens.
If you look back at the history of conservative thought, and you go back to, for example, Sir Edmund Burke and his famous written debates with Thomas Paine, and I guess there were some actual debating debates going on when Paine spent 2 weeks at Burke's house when he was on his way from the United States to France during the French Revolution. And those debates, in fact, caused Paine to go on to write the Rights of Man. And Burke famously, who, you know, a big advocate for corporate rights, specifically the British East India Company, and government protecting that those rights and powers and you know, the symbiosis of government and big corporations. Burke made the comment, "It does me no harm." I'm doing this from memory. I think it's pretty accurate. "It does me no harm if a man engaged in a profession as servile as that of hairdresser or candlemaker, is allowed to work in society. But it does society great violence if such a man is allowed to participate in governance." And, you know, and John Adams, our second president of the United States, the first conservative president of the United States, George Washington called himself a liberal. John Adams, pretty outspoken, that he thought that the rabble should not have anything more than a symbolic, you know, token gesture of governance. And these guys say that the reason why is because they love America, they want to have a safe, secure America, and the only way to have that is to have a governing elite that has a lot of money and a lot of power, and that today is the corporate elite. How do you refute that?
Well, I think that's exactly what's happened. I think that's exactly what we're living in. Look, we're living in a system that where a politician most politicians are financed by big money interests. Most politicians, more specifically, are financed by big corporate interests. And so, in order for us to understand American politics, because American politics can be really perplexing, you know, how can we have a government that continues to tell us we live in the greatest democracy in the world, yet almost every day the government is producing some policy that screws over the average American, that is not representative of the average American's interests? So how can you have that? So that becomes puzzling, and I think that we have to see politics today that it is a system of legalized bribery where the constituents with which most politicians serve are the big money interests who finance their campaigns, often at odds with the interests of these politicians' actual constituents. So once we see the system that way, everything becomes much less perplexing. And so as the book basically argues and shows on each major economic issue, we are fed a steady diet of lies, myths, and half-truths made to make us believe the political system is serving our economic interests when in fact it is doing the exact opposite.
David Sirota, author of Hostile Takeover, How Big Money and Corruption Conquered Our Government and How We Can Take It Back, davidsirota.com, the website tomorrow, Friday, the 28th of April, 4:30 at the Convention Center in Sacramento. David, how do we take it back?
Well, I have an entire chapter on this, and there's a lot of different suggestions. The two that that sort of stick out, I would say, are people need to start investing their focus and their attention and their energies on their backyard, as opposed to only on what's going on in Washington. And that's not to say that what's going on in Washington is not important. It certainly is. We have to take a longer view. We have to realize that the hostile takeover of our government has been a 3 or 4 decade endeavor by the right wing in this country, and that in order to really take our government back, we have to, it's not going to be taken back fully this coming election, the next election, or even the next election after that. This is a long battle. We have to realize that state legislators, county commissioners, local city councilmen become our congressmen. They become our senators, our governors, and will become our president. So we need to start investing more of our attention locally. The second thing I think we need to do is always be focused on pushing for public financing of elections. Until we give politicians an avenue to run for office that allows them to not have to raise huge amounts of money from corporate interests, we will never have a political leadership in this country that is independent of those interests and that can govern on ordinary people's behalf.
But how,
I will say the chapter has plenty of other suggestions.
Yeah, but how, in given the First Amendment and the interpretations of the First Amendment over the years, particularly those interpretations that suggest that the First Amendment rights of free speech, Boston versus Bilotti, for example, that it extends to corporations as well as individuals, and that political speech is a form of free speech, and that money is a form of political speech. How, in the face of that, can we bring this about? I mean, we had just in the last presidential election, we had two candidates who had public financing available to them, and they opted out of it.
Well, I think that, as I say, there's not any one perfect solution to this. Also, you're never going to eliminate the influence of big money on the political process. You're never going to eliminate it. The question is whether you can give people a viable alternative to it, people who want a viable alternative to it. And I think we have models that we can go off of. I think in Arizona, again, not a perfect model, but certainly a better one than many other states have, whereby candidates can opt into a public financing system, and even better, if they're running against somebody who isn't opting into the public financing system, they get more public financing if their opponent goes over what they've initially been given. So I think, again, there's no perfect solution to this. The question, though, is if today in our political system, if somebody wants to run a campaign that's independent of big money interest, it's nearly impossible. I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's very, very tough. We want to create a system that makes it easier, that says there is an alternative. It might not be the easiest alternative, but there is a viable one.
Yeah, well said. And we begin that by starting at the grassroots, starting locally, getting organized, showing up, taking back our parties.
That's exactly right.
David Sirota, the author of Hostile Takeover, How Big Money and Corruption Conquered Our Government and How We Can Take It Back, a brilliant book. Go out and buy a copy today. DavidSirota.com, the website, and for our listeners in Sacramento, David, tomorrow, you're very lucky. David will be there 4:30 at the convention center. David, thank you for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
Great talking with you. After the break, straight talk from D.C. with Talk Radio News.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here asking if this administration is looking more like a train wreck than democracy. We don't need another war. We need a new conductor. Welcome back to the program, my friends. Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Victoria Jones with us on the line, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom. Glad to be with you. Just delighted.
Thank you. What's going on in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, what we have is, as you know, we had Karl Rove testifying yesterday for the fifth time before the grand jury investigating the leak of Valerie Plame's name to the press.
Mm-hmm.
And his lawyers assuring us that it was really just to clear some things up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything more than that, so nobody should read anything into it.
Yes, don't look behind the curtain.
Right, exactly. Don't look behind the curtain. People should know that Prosecutor Fitzgerald, who's the same prosecutor who went after Governor Ryan of Illinois, started that particular investigation by looking into kind of it was a driver's license scam initially, and 9 years later, and several politicians later, he brought down Governor Ryan.
Yeah, yeah, and he is on the record as saying he doesn't care how high something goes, breaking the law is breaking the law, which I took to mean that he was a thinly veiled threat against, or not threat, but warning, let's say, to Cheney and Bush even.
Right, I don't know, you know, I don't know whether he's going after Rove, I don't know whether he's using Rove to go after somebody else. I don't know whether he's going to go after Rove for obstruction. Apparently, what Rove was talking about yesterday was to try and say that he wouldn't have lied because it would have been foolish to have lied.
Right, so here, you know, this is the thing that...
A fascinating defense, by the way, I think.
Right, yeah. This is the thing that if this were a Democratic president, the Republicans would be, here's how they'd be spinning it, and they would be doing it every day, at least every 15 seconds, constantly, and the mainstream media would pick it up. And that is that the number two guy to the vice president has now been indicted. The number two guy to the president is under investigation. Doesn't that mean that the president and the vice president, if not being complicit in crimes, are at least incompetent in knowing that their number two guys are committing crimes?
Well, I don't have an answer for you there.
Yeah, but that is just not being discussed in the media at all. Victoria Jones, I heard today that Ron Wyden was on the floor of the Senate for a very long time. The Republicans kept trying to shut him up because he was saying, hey, why are we giving the oil companies $8 billion in corporate welfare when ExxonMobil just showed an $8.4 billion profit for the last 3 months?
That is a question that has not been adequately answered, but it is certainly a question that even if they were trying to shut him up on the floor, they are very, very much aware that when they go home for their next vacation, which is probably next week, I don't know, but it's pretty...
They're pretty good at it.
Pretty soon, you know. Yeah. They if they are not gassing up their own tanks, their wives or husbands are, and they're going to be coming in for an earful when they find out it's $63 to put the gas in the tank. And so they're proposing all kinds of things. So even if they're trying to shut him up, they know that they're going to have to come up with something, and they're going to come up with all kinds of scams and ideas which are going to contain hidden benefits for the gas industry, but that are in theory going to benefit us.
Yeah, like they're going to give us $100 so we can give it to Exxon so Exxon can give it to Lee Raymond for his retirement.
There you go.
I mean, it's like, give me a break. Now, Robert Byrd, a couple of days ago, gave a speech on the floor of the Senate in which he said to George W. Bush, the Senate can retire you. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Oh, yeah. Senator Byrd came out, and David, do you have that handy? He gave this speech. Oh, I have it handy. It's right here. Senator Byrd, he said, despite more than two centuries of pressure to change and modernize the Senate, he goes through this quack, 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 it retains all its original powers. He says, including providing it, he says, you better believe it, Mr. President, the Senate can send you home. You better believe that. If the House impeaches you, the Senate will try you. The Senate, don't forget it, serves as a court of impeachment and has an equal say with the House on legislation. The Senate has an equal say with the other body on legislation. If the House impeaches you, I will try you.
Wow.
Yeah, that's Robert Byrd.
There's some people playing hardball.
I know, and you know, he lost his wife of 68 years just last month and went on to reinforce the talks that he's going to give in the weeks ahead, saying in his words that he will, I'm quoting Robert Byrd now, will suggest the distinctive features of the Senate have survived for so long because they have a purpose and will endure as long as they serve the good of the nation. And he sees, you know, the Bush administration is going after it. And again, this is another one of these things where Democrats stand up, Democrats speak out, Democrats are standing tough, and the media ignores it, so the American people think the Democrats are a bunch of wimps.
The why of the media ignoring it I find fascinating.
I do, too. And it's just, you know, is it that they know which side their bread is buttered on? Is it that, you know, I mean, what's going on?
I think it's partly going back to the Clinton years and a fear of appearing to be Democrat and so leaning too far the other way.
Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, they're reacting to the old Lee Atwater thing. Somebody's been playing the refs, and the refs are freaked out. They're paranoid. They're
right. I think that that's it. And I even get that a little bit. I just from fragments of conversations I hear.
Mm-hmm. What, the people are afraid of being accused of being liberal?
I get that impression. No one actually comes out and uses those words flat out, but that's the impression that I get.
Yeah, interesting. Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com. At least we know you're straight with us, and I really appreciate it. Victoria, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, industry wins again, putting your safety at risk. I'll tell you how.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
To confirm Ben Bernanke is the 14th chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Every breath you take, every change of rate, jobs you don't create, while we still stack fleet, I'll be watching you.
Watch you, Ben Bernanke.
Every single day. Takes my pay. When growth goes away, inflation will stay, and I'll be watching you. Oh, can't you see the fate where I should be? I'm a poor heartache with each of your mistakes. Press you move your lips. Like a few more bips. When demand then dips and the yield curve flips, I'll be watching you.
Ah, yes. What an esoteric song. When the yield curve flips. That's, by the way, what happened recently. The return on long bills versus short bills reversed itself. The last, typically what that indicates is that a massive realignment of the economy is coming, sometimes known as like the Great Depression or something like that. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS. Give them a call and say hi. They great prices on iPods and all things Macintosh, as well as the organic wine company, Eco Wine, 1-888-ECO-WINE. 1-888-ECOWINE. Just as a FYI, on Saturday this weekend, April 29th, at 11 o'clock in the morning, I will be speaking at the Greater Largo Library in Largo, Florida. This is near Tampa. The library is at 120 Central Park Drive. And the phone number for our Florida listeners for more information, 587-6715. And I'm working from the release in the local paper, so it doesn't have the zip code, or the area code there, 587-6715. So that's coming up, and should be very, very interesting. Should be a great time for all. Now, I mentioned before the break that the cons are saying, there are more important things than Homeland Security, like Walmart's profit. I mean, you've got to take this really seriously. Walmart's profit, I mean, without that profit, without those billions of dollars a year in profit, the Walton family, recipients of a good chunk of that profit, would not be able to lobby Congress. They wouldn't be able to be part of those 18 families who for 10 years have secretly funded the campaign to do away with the estate tax and create a landed gentry in America where you've got 18 families who are capable of actually flipping legislative agendas in the United States. Yeah, it's, worked for Great Britain for a few hundred years, arguably 1,000 years. But I thought in 1776 we said, no, we don't want a landed gentry, and we have no problem with people, accumulating a fair amount of wealth, but we don't want a landed gentry in the United States. Multi-generational wealth that is so vast that it can be used politically in a way that it can overwhelm the will of the people. To quote Thomas Jefferson, that it could put the state at risk. Overgrown wealth that could put the state at risk. Something we really, really don't want. But conservatives, the word conservative increasingly has come to mean corporatist. These guys who are just, if the corporation does it, then all is good. It's a fine thing. And corporate profits are higher, the higher motivation and higher value than all other things. And in fact, let's increase corporate profits. All across the United States, we're seeing corporations are paying a smaller and smaller share of the total taxes, the total dues that we pay to be members of our society. Here in Oregon, for example, it's down to about 4%. It's pretty mind-boggling, isn't it? That you know, we individual taxpayers are paying the rest of this, and yet you know, corporations are using the commons just like all the rest of us are. Well, anyhow, this really came home, I would say, yesterday. Or actually, it was the 26th. What is today's date here? Yeah, today's the 27th. Yeah, this is yesterday. Early yesterday afternoon, conservatives in the House Homeland Security Committee, this is from thinkprogress.org, by the way, conservatives in the House Homeland Security Committee voted down an amendment by Democrat Congressman Ed Markey that would have required 100% of shipping containers that are heading to the United States. Now, shipping containers, you know, these things that they come across on boats like shipping containers, and then they get here, they get picked up and dropped on the back of a semi-truck, and they're the back of the semi-truck, that would have required all of them to be scanned for radiological weapons. In other words, for nuclear bombs. We would like to know if there is a nuke coming into the United States. And that's all Ed Markey said. You know, let's just require that all of them be scanned. This is not something, by the way, that is impossible to do. Hong Kong is doing it right now. And Hong Kong is one of the largest ports in the world. It's how it got to be Hong Kong. I mean, it's how it got to be, you know, this great, big, powerful economic engine that is Hong Kong. And they've been doing this for some time now, for well over a year. Every single container in Hong Kong is right now scanned for the presence of a nuclear weapon. 2% of the containers coming into the United States are inspected. What's wrong with this picture? I mean, we even have the Republicans who are trying to terrify us out there, you know, with their whole be afraid thing, you know, Bush at the RNC.
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, danger, doomed killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy. May God bless you, evil God. Iraq, darkness. The continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. We have fought the terrorists across the earth. Evil. We are staying on the offensive, striking terrorists abroad, and nothing will hold us back. And we will prevail. Be afraid. God bless America. Nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat, and Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Free Afghanistan.
And on it goes. You know, these are just a montage of clips from Bush's speech before the Republican National Committee. You know, his RNC speech when he was running for re-election. The things that he's saying to his supporters.
Terrorists of Afghanistan and Iraq. Fight terrorists. Various terrorist enemies we are facing in Iraq. We are defeating the terrorists doing battle in Afghanistan and Iraq. The resurrection Saddam Hussein's secret police. Sadistic punishment. Mass graves. Radical ideology of hate. Kill the innocent. Tyranny and terror.
Yeah, I think that you can accurately say that Bush is a very good purveyor of terror, of fear. And even the conservative, even Bush and his buddies, they're out there running around going, oh, you gotta look out, these guys might try to sneak a radiological dirty bomb into the United States. Remember that movie? I think it was Bruce Willis was in it. I forget the title of it, where they smuggled a bomb into the port of Baltimore in a Coke machine. Set that thing up, and in the end of the movie, it actually explodes. Through that whole movie, I'm thinking, they're not going to blow that thing up at the end of this movie. Well, they did it in cartoon fashion. I mean, they did it, you know, it looked real, but they didn't show all the people dying the way that it really would happen. But the point is that the meme is out there. The government is, when Bush comes out and when Bush administration officials and all the Fox News guys and everybody, they all come out and say, well, this could happen. This is probable. This is likely. So we got to, you know, worry about this. Then you have to think that the terrorists are thinking, that's a plan. And then it comes out that Bush while he's running around going, yeah, they want to send a dirty bomb over here. That's what they want to do. They're going to come after us. He's doing nothing to prevent it. So an opportunity to prevent it comes along. Let's just do what Hong Kong does. Let's just scan all of our cargo. This technology is not something from outer space. We don't need Scientology to come up with this. This is real. It exists right here, right now. You can do it. This is very simple. It works in Hong Kong. It could work here. However, it might add a penny or two. Literally, a penny or two to the cost of a product, the individual products imported into the United States. You got a container, it's full of thousands of products. Maybe, it might even be less than a penny or two. And that's something that Walmart and all their friends don't want. As they note over at Think Progress, Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, which, by the way, big port city, Boston, mandating a 100% scanning of American-bound shipping containers for just looking for radiological weapons. Shot down. Conservatives in the House killed it. The vote followed an aggressive lobbying campaign by a coalition of industry groups who pressed so-called conservative members to oppose the amendment. Yesterday, Committee Chairman Peter King, Republican from New York, announced that he was caving into industry interests. He says it's not realistic to scan all of the shipping containers coming to the United States for nukes. So what are we going to do? Scan them after they get here? Yeah, that'll work real well. So as a shipping container with a nuclear bomb shows up at the port of Baltimore or the port of Boston or the port of Long Beach or the port of New Orleans or whatever, shows up at a port, is offloaded off the ship, put on the back of a truck, and then they say, okay, go over there and drive through the scanner. And the guys who put the bomb together set it up so that when it moves or when it notices that it's being scanned, it explodes. It's like, who brought this into the country? Well, we did. We offloaded it from the ship. I mean, what is Peter King? Where is his head? Physically. I mean, I realize it's anatomically impossible, but it's probable. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We don't make a party out of loving, but we like holding hands and pitching wood. We don't let our hair go long and shaggy like the hippies out in San Francisco do. I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, a place where even squares can have a ball. We still wave old glory down at the courthouse, white lightning still the biggest thrill of all.
Well, back in 1970, that was Merle Haggard's biggest hit, Okie from Muskogee. In fact, I was working in a country western radio station when that thing came out, WITL in Lansing, Michigan. And I remember it well. And I remember feeling a little more than conspicuous since my hair was rather long at that time. But anyhow, that was Merle Haggard. Now, if you go to merlehaggard.com, you get to hear his latest song. And as I pointed out on this program a couple days ago, when you've lost the Okie from Muskogee guy, you've lost America. When you've lost Merle Haggard, you're gone. Here he is. Let's take care of America first.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first.
we're far and far. Who's blessed? Who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
There you go. You can see it over at MerleHaggard.com. It's actually a music video, and it's just brilliant. And it's just, when you've lost the Okie from Muskogee, man, you're toast. Just absolutely toast. In fact, he gets into a little riff here about Iraq. Let's get out of Iraq, he says.
Who's on the hill and who's watching the valley? Who's in charge of it all? God bless the army and God bless our liberty. That got the rest of it all. In any position of backing away, freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq, get back on the track, and let's rebuild America first.
Yeah, let's get out of Iraq, let's get back on the track and rebuild America first. Speaking of music, songbirds show a talent for grammar. This is an interesting little bit of science trivia, as they say. And what they found is that they can actually teach songbirds how to organize sentences. Starlings are not just exceptional songbirds, they can also learn basic grammar. This is from USA Today. Researchers report in today's Nature magazine that they successfully trained 9 out of 11 European starlings to differentiate between a regular sentence of bird song and one that was embedded with a warbled clause, a concept known as recursive grammar. Inserting sentences and words and clauses like this into sentences creates new meaning and is a type of linguistic boundary that was thought to separate humans from other animals. An accompanying editorial suggests the capacity to recognize recursion might be found only in species that can acquire new patterns of vocalization, for example, songbirds, humans, and perhaps some cetaceans. These big, like whales and things, I think are cetaceans. I'm not sure. But in any case, given that songbirds show a talent for grammar, what about George W. Bush? Yeah. Well, he says in Florence, South Carolina, January 11th, rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? Or in Concord, New Hampshire, on January 29th, 2000, will the highways on the Internet become more few? During the first presidential debate in Boston, he says, the reason we start a war is to fight a war, win a war, thereby causing no more wars. He says, I think if you know what you believe, it makes it a lot easier to answer questions. I can't answer your question. Think about that one for a minute. And then, of course, in Bentonville, Arkansas, the famous one, November 6th, 2000, they misunderestimated me. Well, anyhow, it's news coming out of West Virginia. This is extraordinary. This is totally tragic. Now, keep in mind as you're listening to this that in Canada, all of the miners have a safe room. All of the miners have an oxygen supply. All of the miners can get out safely in Canada. Here we have Buckhannon, West Virginia, trapped deep below ground by poisonous gases. The Sago miners realized at least 4 of their air packs did not work and were forced to share the devices as they desperately pounded away with a sledgehammer in hopes of letting rescuers know where to find them, the sole survivor says. Randall McCloy Jr., the only guy who survived, he said, as my trapped coworkers lost consciousness one by one, the room grew still and I continued to sit and wait, unable to do much else. He said there were not enough rescuers, that's the air packs, to go around. He said he shared his air pack with one man and 3 other miners sought help from others. This is really tragic. He says, we found a sledgehammer. For a long time, we took turns pounding away. We had to take off the rescuers in order to hammer as hard as we could. This effort caused us to breathe much harder. Martin Jr. Toller, 51, and Tom Anderson, 39, made another last-ditch attempt, but they had to come back. So he says, Junior Toller led us all in the sinner's prayer. McCloy says the air behind the curtain grew worse. He said, some drifted off in what appeared to be a deep sleep. One person sitting near me collapsed and fell off his bucket, not moving. It was clear I could do nothing to help him. He says, the last person I remember speaking to was Jackie Weaver, who reassured me that if it was our time to go, then God's will would be fulfilled. This is a non-union mine. Brags about it on their website, that they used bankruptcy to bust the union. In Canada, they're all unionized. They all have safe rooms. What's wrong with this picture? 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program, Viagra for your brain. And no, it doesn't lead to stiff thinking. Just energetic, shall we say. Brussels. Dateline Brussels, New York Times, Dan Bilewski. Investigators for the European Parliament said Wednesday that data gathered from air safety regulators and others found that the Central Intelligence Agency had flown 1,000 undeclared flights over European territory since George Bush came into office, since 2001. Sometimes, the investigators added, sometimes the planes stopped to pick up terrorism suspects who had been kidnapped to take them to countries that use torture. This is the European Parliament saying this. This is not, you know, Greenpeace. This is not the Amnesty International. This is not, you know, some group that has an advocacy position. This is the Parliament of Europe. The operation used the same American agents and the same planes over and over, they said, though they could not say how many flights involved the transport of suspects. The investigation by a committee looking into CIA counterterrorism activities in Europe also concluded that European countries, including Italy, Sweden, and Bosnia and Herzegovina, were aware of the abductions or transfers and therefore might have been complicit. Wow. Italy, I understand that. You know, Silvio Berlusconi, who is pretty much almost a right winger, would have, you can expect he would have gone along with Bush, but Sweden? That surprises me. Its estimate of 1,000 undeclared flights, notes Bilewski in the New York Times, exceeds the numbers previously discussed, including those in an analysis by the New York Times late last year that said the agency operated about 300 flights in Europe between November 2001 and the summer of 2005. They note the report's conclusions are likely to heighten transatlantic tensions at a time when Europe and the United States are already at odds over how to balance liberty, civil liberties, with a fight against terrorists. And the U.S. is still denying that we're using torture. Interesting. This is really interesting. In the meantime, speaking of torture, a Chinese internet writer. Now, you know, keep in mind, a few minutes ago we were talking about how containers coming from China, destined to big box stores all across the United States, conservatives don't want them to be examined because that might add a few pennies to the cost of bringing the goods into the United States, examined for nuclear weapons. The Republicans in the House of Representatives yesterday blocked a legislative attempt to require all cargo containers to be scanned just for nuclear weapons. They have these giant devices that look kind of like a giant U or a square U. You just drive the truck through it. Or you park the truck and you drive this thing by it. And they use, I believe they use gamma rays. And it looks inside the thing. And you can see what's in there. It's not in great detail, but enough detail to know if there's a nuclear bomb in there. And the Republicans were given an opportunity to say, yes, let's scan all the cargo coming into the United States. It would cost less than 1 week in Iraq. It would cost less than 1 week in Iraq to scan all of the cargo coming into the United States from all over the world before it gets here. So we don't have a scenario where it gets offloaded off the ship into the port of Los Angeles and then boom. And the Republicans shot it down yesterday in the House of Representatives. Wherever you may be living, if you have a Republican member of Congress, please take this up with them. Seems like just a reasonable thing to do. You know, sir or ma'am, where were you when this vote happened? How did you vote on this thing? Why is it that you don't want us to be protected? Why is it that you think that it's fine that we have nuclear weapons coming into the United States? I'm a little confused. I don't get it. For that matter, you can call your member of Congress, toll-free, 1-888-355-3588, 1-888-355-3588, and ask them. Now, back to the point that I was making here. Speaking of cheap stuff coming into the United States and torture and the confluence thereof, the place where these two memes, these two ideas, these two thought viruses, these two very, very different gestalts meet is China. Dateline Beijing, this story in distributed by Reuters today. A Chinese internet writer has been charged with attempting to subvert state power. Now, consider that for a minute. Now, I think it is, we know that under the Patriot Act now, you can be charged with terrorism, which means all bets are off and you lose all your liberties and due process is out the window and you can be taken down to Guantanamo Bay. That you can be charged with terrorism if you attack the economic interests within any economic interests within the United States. And some have interpreted that to mean picketing out in front of a fur store or a McDonald's, you know, for the animal rights activists. Or out in front of a defense plant for the anti-war activists, or out in front of Halliburton for those people who think that Cheney's ties to Halliburton are just a little too stinky. We know that in the United States, it's illegal to subvert corporate power. It will bring you afoul very quickly of the Patriot Act, these anti-terrorism laws. But in China, it is illegal to subvert state power. And so this young man, well, young, 45 years old, Yang Tianshui, is now facing 15 years in prison. He was just arrested, according to his lawyer today. Just arrested for attempting to subvert state power. That's what he's charged with. Why? Because he posted an essay on the internet supporting a project called the Velvet Action of China. Now, this is named after the Velvet Revolution. The Velvet Revolution is the system that overthrew communism in the former Czechoslovakia. Remember Vaclav Havel and his Velvet Revolution? Let's take Czechoslovakia peacefully. This movement inside China for a Velvet Revolution. They held an online ballot for government leaders last year. In other words, they said, let's have an election. We'll do it on the internet. It wasn't calling for anybody to be assassinated. It wasn't calling for a military coup. It wasn't saying anything unpatriotic. It wasn't even calling the elected leaders nasty names. Simply, let's have an election. Put up an online ballot. Here are a bunch of people who are involved in politics in China. Who would you vote for? And this guy was arrested and faces 15 years in prison for posting essays on the internet supporting the Velvet Action of China. At least five writers, Reuters notes, were jailed for up to 10 years last year as part of a crackdown on free speech, according to the China chapter of PEN. An association founded in 1921 in Britain to defend freedom of speech. This is incredible. Yang Jianshui, 45, facing 15 years of prison. He'll be 60 years old when he gets out of jail because he dared to go onto the Internet and post a statement saying that he thought it was a good idea that there be discussion of democracy in China. This is the guy that George W. Bush is sucking up to in Washington, D.C. This is the guy that our corporate leaders are sucking up to in the United States. Sure, it's a huge market. China is absolutely a huge market, in large part because we made it a huge market. I was in China back in the 1980s, back when you could stand in Tiananmen Square near that great boulevard, I forget the name of it, you know, it was 16 lanes across, and see a car every 3 or 4 minutes. It was otherwise a sea of bicycles. Now it's just choked with automobiles. How did it become a great power? How did it become a great consumer market? We started using them as our labor source, sending our jobs over there. This is engineered by corporate powers in the United States, and they're just fine. Put guys in prison? Fine. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Glad to be back with you. You know, sometimes you think you know what's going on. Sometimes you don't think you don't know what's going on. Sometimes you're not really sure what's going on. Sometimes you're just totally baffled by it all.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be? You'll recall over the last year, we've had 3 or 4 shows where we've had on guests talking about spy chips, and they've said, look out. Individual item-level spy chips are coming to a store near you. In other words, you buy a pair of jeans, you buy a book, you buy something, and it'll have a spy chip that has that particular piece of clothing on it. So the shoes you're wearing have a spy chip in them that can be tied to that pair of shoes. So when you buy them, you give them your credit card number. They can tie the credit card number to the serial number on that chip, and now they've got you. And so you walk by, say you're standing in a demonstration in New York City out in front of the Republican National Convention, and they simply walk by with a scanner, and they scan all the spy chips, and boom, they know who you are just because of the clothes you're wearing. Well, it seemed like it was, like, very futuristic. Like, we don't have anything to worry about now. I mean, this isn't something they're going to do today, is it? Yeah, actually, it is.
I'm not making this up.
No, I'm not. I'm telling you. This is incredible. This from the Caspian Press. This is interesting. The caveat that I'll put on this. Yeah, this is from the publishers of spy chips. Okay, so spy chip Levi's brand jeans hit the U.S. It may be time to ditch your Dockers and lay off the Levi's, say privacy activists Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre. New information confirms that Levi Strauss & Company is violating a call for a moratorium on item-level RFID by spy-chipping its clothing.
I'm not making this up.
What's more, the company is refusing to disclose the location of its U.S. test. Radio frequency identification is a controversial technology that uses tiny microchips to track items at a distance. Well, you get the idea. So, asked about it, spokesperson for Levi says, Jeffrey Beckman, director of Worldwide U.S. Communications for Levi, says, out of respect for our customers' wishes, we are not going to discuss any specifics about their test. McIntyre was tipped off to the activity by a mention in an industry publication. The article indicated Levi Strauss was looking for additional RFID test partners.
I'm not making this up.
Nope. They're here. They're here now. Amazing. Or coming to a town near you. Steven in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Steven, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. This is going to be a little weird, but I thought it might be good to every once in a while get away from the chicanery in the world and everything. But do rural and suburban Americans not have a bizarrely exuberant and ecologically damaging interest in lawn care maintenance?
Yeah, they do. And, it, you know, it's something that comes from 14th, 15th, 16th century England. The aristocracy, in order to prove that they were so rich they didn't need to grow food, started growing lawns. And yeah, it became a fetish among the British that we picked up in the 19th century.
Yeah, people inevitably want whatever it is they can't afford, yet they see displayed. So
yeah. And what's really funny is if you travel around rural Europe outside of the United Kingdom, what you'll find is that many people's lawns are vegetable gardens now.
Yeah, that would be great if people were spending their weekend time doing that and growing flowers and heirloom tomatoes and things like that.
We lived in Germany for a year, 86, 87, and in a little town, Stadtsteinach, out in the middle of nowhere. And I'd say half the people in town, their yards were actually giant vegetable gardens. And so we came back to Atlanta and thought, this is a good idea, and tried to put a vegetable garden in our front yard. The neighbors came by and said, the neighborhood association, this is illegal, you can't do this.
It's crazy. It's so backwards.
I know.
Bizarre. Now we've got enormous quantities of drinking water, petrol fertilizers, time being dumped into these chemical nightmares.
No, and we're polluting our runoff water, our whatever you call that water that goes, you know, into the storm drains and into the rivers all these chemicals. And not only the fact that, you know, we're wasting enormous amounts of sunlight that could be used to grow food. Steve, good point. Thank you very much for the call. Larry in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. My comment is about Iraqi contractors, but you brought up that movie again, so I wanted to let you in on
Some of All Fears.
The movie is Some of All Fears. It starred Ben Affleck as Jack Ryan. It's a book by Tom Clancy.
Yep.
And
thank you.
That bomb was actually just exploded in Denver at the Super Bowl in the book. But anyway, getting to the war privatization talks in Warsaw, Poland, there's a conference by the International Committee of the Red Cross being held in Warsaw, and it's about the security contractors in Iraq. Exactly what is the legal context under which they are governed? If you remember the lady and the student in, I believe it was Harvard, that questioned Bush
mm-hmm.
about that particular subject.
Yeah, and he said he'd ask Rumsfeld and get back with her.
Right. Well, if I recall correctly, the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, during the war, when they had the Iraqi constitution drawn up, the contractors were exempted from the legal proceedings in Iraq, and they are operating under a gray area.
That's
pretty
incredible.
Much they
Larry,
can do what they want to do.
Larry, we've got to go to a break here at the bottom of the hour. It's a hard break. I don't have any choice over. But if you learn more about this, or if you can track down a URL, would you call us back?
I put it on your message board.
On our message board. I'll go looking for it. Thank you, Larry. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. State Senator Deborah Bowen of California is with us on the line. Her website, Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N .com. And Senator Bowen, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
Glad to have you here. This is an issue that I wanted to speak with you about, the recertification of Diebold in California and some of the potholes here that the state may be running into. This is an issue that is certainly, on the one hand, a California issue, and we're on the air in several radio stations in California and Sacramento and Eureka and whatnot, and on the weekends in San Francisco and other cities. But this is also a national issue, because as California goes, so very often on so many issues, so goes the United States. Give us an update on what's going on here.
Well, in February, the Secretary of State illegally certified the Diebold TSX for use in California. It was illegal because state law requires the machines to comply with Federal Election Commission standards, which ban interpreted code. And there is also a problem with the readback mechanism for blind voters. Then in March, the group Voter Action sued the Secretary of State over the certification. And that lawsuit is pending. It asks that the machines be banned from use in November. Since then, seven counties that were planning to use touchscreen machines, many of which were Diebold, have decided not to use them this year and to go to paper ballots. So we're seeing counties start to look at cost, security, and accuracy concerns, and the potential that this lawsuit will be successful in California as it was in New Mexico.
So you're optimistic that you may actually be able to bump Diebold out of here?
Well, in the long run, I think we will be able to. We'll have another round of certification in 2007 before the 2008 elections as new federal requirements come into play. So this story about how we vote and the voting equipment is far from over.
But these machines will be in place for the 2006 elections?
We're going to see some machines, although many fewer than I think we would have had we not brought so much attention to this issue. Again, many counties, they're $5,000 a machine. Many counties are looking at that and saying, you know, the law is going to change again in 2007, and it just doesn't make financial sense to spend that kind of money on machines that you may only be able to use in two elections.
Right. Forgive my ignorance of California politics, but is Arnold Schwarzenegger up for re-election in 2006 or 2008?
2006.
So is he an advocate of these voting machines?
Well, he did sign my measure last year that required that we use the voter-verified paper audit trail to recount the machines. But other than that, I don't know where he stands on the use of the machines.
Interesting. We're talking with California State Senator Deborah Bowen, DEBRABOWEN.com, her website. Senator Bowen, it seems to me that the real issue here, the large issue here, is one of privatization. If the Bush administration decides that they're going to privatize the concession at Yellowstone so that some corporation can come in and skim a little profit off the top of selling hot dogs to tourists, I think that's wrong. But, you know, I'm not going to go to the mattresses over it. If New Jersey wants to privatize one of their toll roads, well, Pennsylvania just did, Chicago, Illinois just did, you know, that's, I think it's wrong, but, you know, those are the states doing that. But there is this concept of the commons, that there is this stuff that we all collectively own, you know, our clean air, our water in many places, our police and fire departments, our roads, our public roads, our public school systems, the commons, and the way that the commons is administered is by us through our elected representatives, people like you, acting hopefully and presumably on behalf of us, you know, in concert with our interests. And so the way that we administer the commons of government itself, which is another one of the vital commons, and all the things the government administers, is through our vote. How on earth did our vote, the first step in the process of the entire commons, how did that get privatized?
Yeah, well, we have a huge problem, and it's, you know, not just the machines in California, but across the country. We also have this huge issue with the voter registration rolls. We've got a report from the Brennan Center for Justice in New York showing that 9 out of the 50 states have adopted a match criteria that have made it exceedingly difficult for people who are legally eligible to register to vote, to register or re-register. And this should remind you a little of Florida and the concern with, you know, the voter roll is a common too. It's, right. It belongs to all of us. And yet under this system, we had in California 43% of the people in LA County who tried to register or re-registered to vote between March 1st and January 1st and March 15th were not placed on the statewide voter rolls, 26% statewide. And this is going to be an issue across the country. I think you're hearing it probably the very beginning of it now. Think about how it will impact issues like the pro-choice movement in South Dakota, where the state enacted a ban on abortions and the pro-choice movement is registering voters and circulating petitions. They use the same restrictive means of allowing people to qualify, eligible voters to qualify, and people who aren't qualified can't sign a petition and won't be able to vote at the polls on that anti-choice measure. So the battleground is really shifting now to who gets to be on the voter rolls, what eligible voters are wrongly kept off the voter rolls because of the way that we do the database. And by the way, most of the database work is outsourced too.
Amazing. And we just learned just a week or so ago that over 300,000 people have been tossed off the voting rolls in Ohio just before the 2004 election,
right.
The majority of them in areas that went more than 80% Democratic in the previous election. Paul Weyrich is the guy, the Ronald Reagan's direct mail guy, and the Moral Majority, you know, he was involved with, and claims credit for getting Ronald Reagan elected because of his direct mail, you know, dropping millions and millions of pieces of mail out there. And a fairly outspoken conservative strategist, Republican strategist. He's been around for a long, long time. And about 10 years ago, Paul Weyrich made an interesting observation out loud, and it just seems to me like this is coming back to haunt us. This is just about 20 seconds here. Paul Weyrich, and I'd like your thoughts on this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, he started out saying, you know, our Christian friends, because he was speaking in a church, but the point is he was talking to Republican activists as well. Our leverage in an election goes up as the number of voters goes down. This has been Republican doctrine, apparently, for well over a decade.
This is exactly the reason I am so concerned about these voter database issues and why we need to be paying attention to this nationally. If you make it harder for people to register to vote, you will disproportionately impact people who move a lot, newly registered voters, poorer people, and you just know that the result will be a disproportionate impact on progressive voters.
So what can we do?
Well, in California, we forced the Secretary of State to agree to change the regulations that do this. It hasn't happened yet, but after insisting that it was impossible and it couldn't be done or it shouldn't be done until after the June primary here, he agreed to change it. But this is an issue where progressives really need to come together across this country and draw attention to the fact that we're seeing criteria pushed by the Bush administration that will result in the disenfranchisement of tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands, in voters, eligible voters. So people ought to go to my website, deborahbowen.com, where we'll continue to talk about the issue there. I'm raising it on blogs. I'm doing as much radio as I can, because I'm so glad you played that clip, because there's nothing like actually hearing that laid out in a strategic sense to alarm those of us who don't like to think that that there are major forces in this country who don't want everyone to vote.
Yeah, we all would like to just kind of be blissfully ignorant, you
right.
know, or hopeful, you know.
Yeah.
Gee, maybe they're
hard.
Good people. They just disagree with us politically.
Yeah.
No, I'm
hard.
Sorry. They're up to something.
Yeah, it's very hard to imagine that a strategy would actually be, you know, let's not allow people to register or let's make it hard for people to vote. And yet we saw that in Ohio with long lines, and we saw it in Florida with the manipulation of the voter rolls that was supposed to just purge felons and took a whole lot of voters who were eligible off the rolls. So, and it's stuff that gets done in a back room where most yeah. people aren't paying attention.
Yeah. Now, Deborah Bowen, you're running for the Secretary of State in California, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Great.
I'll make sure this gets done right. I actually yeah. do want everyone to vote.
Yeah, there you go. And as Secretary of State, you would be the senior voting official, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I think this is so important to have somebody like you in that position, and I'm impressed. I salute you that you would walk away from a seat in the Senate there in California to run for Secretary of State and take that you know leap. And I salute you for that. I encourage everybody to go to Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N.com. People can help out there. They can contribute. They can volunteer to participate in the campaign. I think people all across the United States should be participating in this, not just in California.
As California goes, you know, we can force change in South Dakota. We can push this issue nationally. The first step is for us to get this right. I mean, imagine this kind of stuff going on with voter rolls in California. In California.
Yeah. Yeah, which many people think of as a relatively progressive state.
Yeah.
It's amazing. D-E-B-R-A-B-O-W-E-N, Deborah Bowen, deborahbowen.com. Check it out. Deborah Bowen, Senator Deborah Bowen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for raising these issues.
Great speaking with you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio. We'll be right back.
the Tom Hartman Program.
Indeed, my friends, democracy in America, it's on its way again. Trust me, people are waking up. Here's a little bit of good news for you to wrap this thing up. A poll jointly done by the Wall Street Journal and NBC. You can find it over at MSNBC. Do you believe President Bush misled the nation in order to go to war with Iraq? 5.9% said no. 94% said yes. That's only half the story, though. 94% of Americans who responded to this Wall Street Journal MSNBC poll said, 94% said, yes, Bush misled us. But here's the mind-boggling part. The total number of responses, 86,466. For a poll, somebody says on TV, oh, what do you think about this? Here's another poll. This is from CNN. How much credibility does President Bush have when he says he were enforcing U.S. borders? 60 to 100% credibility, 1%. 20 to 59% credibility, 1%. 0 to 19% credibility, 9%. Less than 0% credibility when he says we're enforcing our borders, 90%. Amazing. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy, help us wrap up this weekend with a bit of optimistic good news out of your fine state.
Okay, Tom, we did have some. General Clark was in town a couple days ago supporting Patsy Madrid. He did a fundraiser with Mikey Weinstein, who has the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And I hear it was terrifically successful. I couldn't afford to buy my little ticket. And we had a news conference yesterday at one of the parks. There was a bunch of us vets behind supporting Patsy Madrid. And we got some good coverage. The past general of the New Mexico National Guard was there supporting Patsy, and he blasted a little bit. Now, he's been retired for about 10 years, so I don't think he can be classed as a rebellious general, mm-hmm. unfortunately. But he made some very pointed comments. There's going to be a protest down at the Kirtland Air Force Base and Sandia's Weapons Lab tomorrow about no bomb in Iran. Unfortunately, I won't be able to go because I'm going to be smoking some turkeys and making some potato salad because we're going to have a big old potluck out of my house tomorrow night because we're trying to get everybody involved to get some canvassing done and get like-minded folks together and take back Democratic Party. So we can take back the country.
There you go. Well, good on you, Roy.
Knowing that you're going to be down in Florida, I just thought I'd I said tomorrow. I'm talking Saturday. I was thinking this was the end of the week. But
well, I'm actually
everybody, get up on Democrats.org. Find out where something's going on this weekend and get involved. And if there isn't anything getting involved this weekend, go out and do something next month. You know, we got to do it. We got to get the neighbors. We got to get our neighbors involved.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
And
we've got to be taking our country back.
Have a great trip.
Thank you, Roy.
Keep on keeping on.
I'll do it. Okay, talk to you later.
You've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you lost Iraq. So I'm taking my country back.
Yes, that's what we've got to do. We've got to be taking our country back, my friend. My
treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're down and deeper in debt.
Watchdogs say House ethics reform is a scam. You get this from Reuters. Congressional watchdogs blast an ethics reform bill pending in the House of Representatives on Tuesday as a scam. They would do little to curb the influence of money in politics. This legislation is so weak it's embarrassing, says Chili Pengri, president of Common Cause.
Hey, I'm taking my
we've got to do it.
You ain't been doing her.
understand why you were hot. 'Cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame. Tried to tell us it was all the same. Now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMDs you promised on TV, admit it, you figured it wrong. So
Fred Wertheimer, the president of advocacy group Democracy 21, he says this bill is based on the premise you can fool all of the people all of the time. This is what the Republicans are up to in Congress with this so-called ethics reform legislation. The House would allow lawmakers to continue to accept gifts and meals worth up to $50 from lobbyists. Does not lengthen the current one-year cooling-off period before a former lawmaker can begin to lobby his former colleagues. Other measures would have been that would have required lobbyists to report details about fundraising events and campaign work have been dropped from the bill. And the bill says you can still have earmarks in other bills. What does John Boehner say? He says, I'm proud of it. I'm frankly very proud of the bill that we have. It's a very substantial bill. The critics will be critics. Yeah, from the guy who's replaced Tom DeLay. Amazing. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, I'll be asking conservative Steve Malloy, shouldn't corporations be more responsible than we the people? Conservative Dominic Maglio, he's afraid of free speech in our schools. And Mark Morano, what's wrong with a gay, happy family? That and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.